Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The New American Economy. No, Just Transitions. Patty DeMarco's in the house with us today. And, you know, sometimes I'm old. Sometimes the brain cells don't connect. Patty, welcome back. Hi.
Thank you. We're doing Just Transitions.
Just labor, transitions today.
Labor, environment, and health.
You see, you know what this is you brought somebody with you today.
I did.
And I have spent the last 5 minutes giving Tom Hoffman a hard time.
Well, you know, he's...
listening to dumb jokes.
Yeah. You want to tell your banjo joke?
No.
No, okay.
So in any case, Tom was in the labor movement for 20-some years with SEIU. He left there, went to Clean Water, cleaned that up. Clean Water Action. Got it. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. And he is now with the Sierra Club, and not Irish Spring, but the Sierra Club. And Tom, welcome back, man.
Thank you very much for having me.
Always a pleasure, man. Always a pleasure. We appreciate you being here.
Yeah, I love the banter.
Banter. The banter is good. We're going to get in trouble with Patty, but that's okay. Patty's got two ruffians in the house with her today. So, Patty, what's going on?
Well, we're in battle for saving safe drinking water in America. You know, all across the country, the infrastructure is getting older, and people are experiencing pollution of kinds that were never designed to be treated in the current treatment systems. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this before.
Right. And frack water.
Well, frack water, hydrocarbons, stuff that you wash down the drain from your personal care products, all this kind of polluting, mm-hmm. non-biodegradable contaminants. And what we need to do is to look at the extent of this problem, how we as a river-based city play a role in it, as many other cities on the edges of rivers are starting to examine how can we keep our water, our drinking water, safe for people and other living things. So, Tom, I'm really happy to have you us today to talk about some of these issues because you really know a lot about it. What's the biggest problem that we're facing as we try to look at drinking water preservation in the future?
So, I think you hit on it really. Is the aging infrastructure.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the thing about sewer pipes and water pipes is you bury them under the ground and you don't see them until they break.
Right.
And that's the only time the maintenance gets done because it's difficult to do. It's expensive to do. And you get people like what happened up in Flint. It's like, oh, we're going to do it the cheapest way we can so we can turn around and sell it off to the highest bidder. And then you get people getting sick.
Yep.
Well, and it's also difficult because it's costly to repair these things, especially if you're looking at infrastructure that's been in place for hundreds of years. I mean, I know in places there are still wooden water mains that have been coated with, you know, whatever it is that coats them, and that's the only thing keeping them intact. And you have places that have old cast iron pipes, like we do many areas in Pittsburgh. And these are things that, you know, over time, we need to think about replacing them. It's a huge cost.
Yes. And another issue is that this area is a lot more grown up and developed and built up than it was when we sort of built our sewer system.
Yeah.
So the sewer system was designed to handle a certain amount of sewage and runoff, but you know, the people who did that never dreamed of the stuff on McKnight Boulevard. They never dreamed of the waterfront. So what we have now is a situation where water runs off those big impervious surfaces, and it ends up in the sewers. And in a large part of our area, the stormwater sewers and the sewers are the same pipes.
Combined overflow,
they're combined, right. So when all that rush of water comes when it rains, it's more than the treatment plant can handle. So the sewer system operates exactly the way it was designed. And these little gates flip up. And all the raw sewage and the combined. Stormwater go straight into the river. They don't go past GO. They don't collect $200, just right into the river.
Yeah, and this is a huge problem in many, many cities.
Yes,
and
it's older industrial cities, yeah.
And partly the paving of areas that were once acting like sponges, they're now acting like, fast water troughs that just funnel the water.
The difference between a sponge and a funnel.
There
right?
you go. It's really a big problem. And we have a lot of places where efforts to kind of attack this and make it better have been extending into the management practices of the Water and Sewer Authority and the drinking water authorities, where you're trying to see how can we mitigate these pollution problems that happen. And they look really, really scary in some ways.
So one of the things that we've been really excited to see is our city water authority, Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority, has been really showing great leadership on these green approaches to solving this problem. Like, how can we build a sponge so that all that stormwater just doesn't go in the sewers,
right?
Because when there's no stormwater in the sewers, the sewage treatment plant has no problem handling the sewage on a dry day. It's those wet days. And so the city has been really showing, PWSA has been showing great leadership. They have a whole citywide plan. They know if we want to take this much sewage out of the rivers, we got to put this kind of green infrastructure in this place, and it all works together. So they've shown great leadership.
Yeah. And there's a lot involving public awareness, too, because people don't know where they are on a watershed. They don't have any idea.
Right.
I mean, they turn on the tap and the water happens and they assume it's clean and good, but they have no idea what it takes to get it that way or keep it that way and what their own role is in that process.
Right.
And it's a real important part of the problem.
Patty, let me ask you a question. I mean, sewage runoff, with the raw sewage getting shot out into the rivers in the Ohio and elsewhere, and it going downriver, there are natural remediations that happen that don't happen with what we have been doing, what we did in the past here in Pittsburgh with the steel mills. They'd pull water off out of the river, they'd spray down the steel, and then it would rush back into the river, carrying along all the crud that came with the manufacturing of steel.
pH was 3 in those days.
Yeah. No wonder we got 3-eyed catfish in the Monongahela. But
you do.
The thing here is I mean, there's a natural remediation process with this, and there's a natural prevention process. If we build water capture, oil sequestration for parking lots, that kind of stuff, that helps a lot.
It does.
Yeah.
Anything you can do to keep hydrocarbons out of the water supply in whatever form they're coming, whether it's going into the river through storm runoff or whether it's going down the drain, that's a huge, huge benefit, because prevention is, in this case especially, much, much easier than trying to clean it up after. Especially we use our rivers for drinking water. I mean, it's close to 3 million people use the Allegheny and Monongahela in Ohio rivers for drinking water up and down that watershed. And so it's important, to keep it clean.
I'd like to do one special shout out.
Hold that thought.
Yes.
We're going to take a short break. We'll come back and we'll talk some more.
Yep.
In the meantime, I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to Just Transitions.
Like what you hear? You can access exclusive content and other perks at patreon.com/theunionedge.
If you haven't already signed up for health coverage through healthcare.gov and haven't secured insurance for 2018, time is running out. The deadline to sign up on the Federal Health Exchange is midnight Friday. With the period being 6 weeks shorter than it was in prior years, state agencies and consumer groups are working hard to make sure people take action. There are some concerns that higher premiums may deter some people from even looking into a plan, but Walker Wilson with the State Department of Health and Human Services says it is worth a look.
The cost of coverage may go up for certain people based on the insurance carriers who are making plans available on the healthcare.gov website. But people who qualify for a subsidy, their out-of-pocket costs may not change at all.
Tuesday, Governor Cooper asked the federal government to extend the open enrollment period for a week, but there's no indication that requests will be granted. There's free help available both in person and over the phone. More information can be found at ncnavigator.net or by calling 855-733-3711 to speak with trained enrollment navigators. According to published reports, as of December 2nd, just over 209,000 people in North Carolina signed up for 2018 insurance through the exchange, compared to 500,000 for this year's coverage. Scott Mulhauser with Consumers for Quality Care urges people to take action.
You're in these final days and these final hours, and Friday night's the deadline. And so it's critical that folks just take a look. They go online and they make sure that they're covered, their family's covered. Use this open enrollment period to make it work for you.
Walker Wilson says the state has been able to encourage involvement in the past, and she's hoping the trend will continue.
North Carolina has been one of the highest enrollment states where we've moved more people from the uninsured category to the insured category. And I think that's in part due to the statewide focus on this and the local partnerships where there are people who are on the ground helping people enroll.
Nationwide, as of this week, 4.7 million people have signed up for health care through the exchange. Some states with their own health exchanges, which North Carolina does not have, were able to extend their enrollment period until December 22nd. I'm Stephanie Carson for the North Carolina News Service.
Somos la Unión Internacional de los Panaderos, Confiteros y Trabajadores de Tabaco y los Molineros de Grano luchando por los trabajos americanos. Nabisco, fabricante de marcas icónicas como el Oreo, Ritz Crackers y Chips Ahoy, ha ganado la fortuna en América y su respuesta patriótica ha sido enviar los trabajos americanos a México. Como resultado, los consumidores en los Estados Unidos siguen boicoteando los productos hechos en México. Ingresos corporativos han bajado en todo Norteamericana, los consumidores están enviando un mensaje muy fuerte y claro. Ahora los líderes religiosos de todas las religiones a través de los Estados Unidos están pidiendo una investigación del modelo de negocio de Nabisco y han programado un tour de 6 ciudades para investigar el asunto de manera más profunda. En el mismo momento en que las negociaciones de NAFTA están en la mente de todos, la comunidad religiosa comenzará a hablar de los trabajadores, los políticos y otros líderes religiosos con la intención de discutir el exilio de trabajos por Nabisco desde una perspectiva moral y ética y publicarán ampliamente sus hallazgos. El BCTGM y su socio Justicia Obrera Interconfesional piden a toda la gente de fe y conciencia social que se unan a esta lucha contra la explotación por Nabisco de trabajadores en los Estados Unidos y México. Millones ya están boicoteando los productos de Nabisco hechos en México y ya está afectando sus ganancias de la empresa. Únase a nuestra lucha por la justicia moral y económica. Únase a nosotros en www.fightforamericanjobs.com. www.fightforamericanjobs.com.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to Just Transitions in this, I got to tell you, we're having lots and lots of fun. In studio today, Patty DeMarco. Patty, welcome back.
Thank you, Charles. And I have my guest today, Tom Hoffman with the Sierra Club Clean Water Campaign and Safe Rivers Campaign.
Thank you very much.
You are going to do a shout out to some of your colleagues and collaborators on this project.
Yes, so I talked about the PWSA taking a real leadership on green and having this citywide plan. One of the parts of that is a plan to really redo the 4 mile run area. And it's sort of almost iconic because, first off, if they were to do that, that whole area would become really nice again. There would be wetlands in there. They'd fix up the pond. They would make a real beautiful paths and stream channel going down to the going down towards the river. And so for a lot of people, green infrastructure, you ask them what it is, you know, you point at green infrastructure and they say, oh, that's a park. I know what that is. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's one of the big differences between that and traditional stuff is you can actually see what you're getting for your money.
Right.
Yeah, and with the city of Pittsburgh, that's one of the things, because I grew up in Squirrel Hill.
Yeah.
And Schenley Park, there have been some massive changes to what they're doing down there. And when I was a kid, I used to fish at Panther Hollow, which is part of this. And, you know, it has always been, for me, a very frustrating thing because the city of Pittsburgh had the ability to do some very minor changes that would have greatly improved just the natural fishing at Panther Hollow and the rest of that. And quite frankly, I don't know if they're doing that now or not, but, you know, it's a long time coming.
The thing is, it is possible to adopt policies that establish natural treatment systems like wetlands, and they also protect storm overflow. But it does involve people knowing better, too, like putting rain barrels on your downspouts and kind of preventing things from going into and not paving every square inch of your property to park cars on, you know, but look at ways that you can avoid putting contaminants and putting extra water into the system. It's a real important part of your program. How is that working?
So one of our partners on the Clean Rivers campaign is the 9 Mile Run Watershed Association. Mm-hmm. And you want to talk about people who do rain barrels and that sort of thing. They are it.
I got one in my, they've got four on each corner of my
house. They've really shown great leadership.
Yeah.
But one of the exciting things about this 4 Mile Run project is it got its, in the current city budget, it got its last piece of funding so that they can, early next year, they can put up plans to actually start building it.
That's great.
Because one of the reasons that we feel a fair amount of panic is that in order to do this green first approach in Pittsburgh, we have to be able to show to the EPA, and we have about 5 years to do it, that we can and want to and are committed to doing it.
Right.
And so we have to have large scale green infrastructure that's working, that we can, you know, measure it. And we need to get it going now. So we've really excited to see the work that the Parks Conservancy and PWSA have done on 4 Mile Run. Mm-hmm. We're starting to try and do the same thing over for Negley Run and Hess Run because there was that terrible flooding
On Washington Boulevard. That's
one of the other big advantages of a green approach is that actually does reduce flooding.
Mm-hmm. And having things like not asphalt-covered parking lots, you know, putting more permeable paved parking lots. And I know there are a number of places in the city that have now converted their parking lots to either gravel surface or to the grass with the plugs in between so you can drive over it. I know they did that in large parts of what's at the top of Phipps, and I think the museum is considering converting a part of their parking lot into that area. So you have permeable parking lots instead of runoff chutes for parking lots.
And you were talking about public policy. One of the important public policy issues that will be coming to the fore shortly is a stormwater utility. Mm-hmm. And so basically, if you have a big parking lot and all that water runs off your parking lot, you're using the city sewer system.
Right.
And you're actually sort of abusing it, right? and if if we could adopt a policy that would encourage people to do what you said, you know, those permeable pavements and things like that, that would encourage people to take a more green approach. And so what a stormwater utility does is it looks at how much of that impervious surface you have, and it calculates basically how much stormwater you send, and then it charges you a fee for that, for using this our stormwater sewers. And what that does is if you invest in green solutions on your parking lot, then you're you're using the sewer less, and so you get a reduced fee for using the...
So this is an example of trying to assign a value to the ecosystem service of wetlands and permeable, you know, grasses and so forth. So this isn't something that people are used to paying for, but they've been using without really understanding. Right. And I think one of the things that's really exciting is as people recognize the value of, you know, natural water treatment and water management systems, they'll find that it's a lot more cost effective in the long run.
Right. Because one of the, because the way it's set up now, the amount that you pay to use the storm sewers is based on, I kid you not, how much water you use.
Exactly right.
So if you, I don't know if, you know, I love Home Depot. It's a great place. But if you've been there, they've got maybe three bathrooms. And so the amount that they pay for the use of the stormwater sewers is based on how much water gets used in that bathroom. And that's it, pretty much.
But they have huge parking lots.
But they've got a huge parking lot, and they're a huge contributor to the problem. And so the stormwater utility is a way of trying to make sure that everybody's paying their fair share for this problem.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting thing, and people assume that clean drinking water is always with us and relatively cheap. But if we don't take care of it and look forward to mitigating some of the, you know, abuses we've been using, we will not have clean water into the future. So I want to thank you for your work, Tom. You're an absolutely tireless, you know, advocate for safe and clean drinking water and better rivers. And I thank you so much.
It's very exciting work. Thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Tom, it's always a pleasure. We appreciate it. And how do we find out more about the Sierra Club?
So we have the usual Facebook pages. There's one for our local group, the Allegheny Group. There's one for our state Sierra Club. Our state has a website, www.sierraclub.org. Somehow there's Pennsylvania in there. I forget how it goes. And those are probably the best ways, I think. And the two campaigns that I'm involved with, this Clean Rivers campaign and the Our Water campaign, which is trying to keep Pittsburgh's water safe, affordable, and public, are run by Pittsburgh United, which is a local coalition of labor, faith, and community groups.
And it's part of the Partnership for Working Families, which is nationwide, which is a great organization.
Yes.
So I think we need to think about taking care of our watersheds, taking care of our water, and taking responsibility for what we use and also what we dump out.
Right.
And I really look forward to having more conversations with the future as we get this program tighter and going forward.
Cool. There you go. Meantime, I'm Charles Showalter, and you're listening to Just Transitions.
Like what you hear? You can access exclusive content and other perks at patreon.com/theunionedge.